The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTVR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And welcome to all of our radio listeners this morning. Also watching us on Access Pittsfield, Channel 1301, and on PCTV Select over the top service. And you can always listen to our podcast and watch the video on demand. You can watch the show any way you like, and we always appreciate you folks tuning in. We got a great show for you today. We have the folks from Berkshire Environmental Action Team, BEAT, Jane Wynn, the executive director, and Rose Wessel, the program director of No Fracked Gas in Mass. And we'll be talking about a variety of environmental subjects and a very interesting discussion I'm sure we're going to have on a lot of things happening in the community starting right away this year. We've got a dam removal. We've got a generating plant conversion. Potentially, we've got some things, some invasive plants we're going to talk about, maybe pulling, maybe even eating them. Who knows? We'll talk about that in just a moment. First, let's get to our weather forecast. You know, you look outside today, it's a soca. We got a soca. It's going to be wet all day today and probably overnight and into tomorrow. They're saying almost 3 inches of rain we could see out of this storm. So we'll see what the National Weather Service has as we listen to that right now. Here we go.
Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Flood watch in effect through Saturday morning. Today, rain. A slight chance of thunderstorms this afternoon. Some thunderstorms may produce heavy rainfall this afternoon. Cooler. Near steady temperature in the lower 50s. East wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of rain near 100%. Tonight, rain. Lows in the mid 40s. East wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming northeast 5 to 10 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of rain 90%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, chance of rain 100%. I would say that's a lock. We're definitely getting rain, and we're getting it right now. If you look out your window, and there are a little bit of ponding going on out there. It's just kind of a steady rain right now. Nothing real heavy, but they say we could get some of that today. So keep an eye out for that. Watch your basements, and don't drive through any big floods. Definitely want to see everybody safe through any kind of storm like that. I don't think it's going to be that heavy for us, but you never know. You never know. I don't want to be the weather person here, so. All right, welcome to the show, Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM, and joining me, Jane Wynn and Rose Wessel. Good morning, both of you, and
morning.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Great. It's been a while, and certainly friends of the show, been on quite a bit as I've interviewed folks here on Morning Drive. Always a fantastic conversation, lots of stuff going on. Let's talk first about generating electricity. And how that is done these days and how it's changing. Rose, I think we've talked in the past about peaker plants, and we've sort of educated the listeners about what that is and why we need them and why we maybe ought to see those transition to something else. So maybe give us an update on how that's going.
Just for folks that hadn't heard previous conversations about it, a peaker plant is a power electric generation plant that comes on when the grid is all maxed out. So it tends to happen when there's a string of really, really hot days or a string of really, really cold days. They fire up these peaker plants to supply more electricity, and they tend to be really old. The average age is about 50 years old, and they tend to be inefficient. Some are so old that they still run on kerosene. They run on jet fuel. So
the problem with that, of course, is it's a high polluting.
Yeah, very high polluting. Yeah. And even the other ones are, natural gas fired, and that comes with particulate matter pollution and NOx, nitrous oxides, and other pollutants as well. And because they only supply power for a few hours at a time, it's fairly easy to substitute them with battery storage because there are times on the grid where we're only running at about 40% capacity. We could be using that extra capacity to store up the batteries and then use that when we need more. So what are
those peak times where we need the most electricity, where a plant like that might start running or might be needed?
It's usually in the summer. It's in the evenings, about 5 to 8, and usually if it's been hot for a few days. And then also if you get a polar vortex type situation for a long time, then it tends to fire up as well.
So that winter.
Winter
time, the depths of the winter, and then the really, really hot days of the summer.
Yep. But it doesn't happen often. Most of these plants run 5% or less. A lot of them are 15% or less, but a lot of them are 5% or less.
So it seems like a big investment to keep those plants all sort of online, maintained, ready to go, but actually not working, not doing anything 95% of the time.
And Pittsfield Generating is one of them. We actually started off by asking the peaker plant owners, do you have any plans to decarbonize? And Cogentrix owned two of them in Berkshire County, one at the end of Doreen Street and one on Woodland Road down in Lee. And they said, yeah, you're right. We should be doing that. So over the couple of years since we've been talking to them, they stopped those plants and they dismantled them. They are gone. So there's now extra room at the substations. And we've also been talking to Pittsfield Generating. If folks don't know, it's the big one in the middle of the town with the three big smokestacks. You can't miss it if you've ever been on Merrill Road.
That was built in the early 90s?
Yep. Came online in the early 90s. And at that time, it was supplying GE with steam. So this is a big old steam generation plant that also in the process of making steam makes electricity.
So cogeneration.
That was
how it was sold, right? To do two things at once and maybe be more efficient. That was the concept of it.
Yep. And now it's just used for electricity and only about 2% of the time. So it's sitting there, not generating very often, but when it does, it creates a lot of pollution.
And in the winter, they actually get paid to store oil so that if there isn't enough natural gas to run, they can run on oil, which is even worse for our local air. Plus, as ratepayers, we're paying for that whether they use it or not.
So they store oil. That's very interesting.
Yep. Some of those big tanks around there, that's what that is. That's the oil being stored.
So it's sort of a backup to the backup in a way.
Exactly. And we pay for it whether it gets used or not.
And you talk about plants getting older and so on. I mean, it's maintained within the legal limits, but we recently had a tour. There's been a new development. Massachusetts came up with an Office of Energy Transformation, and they're looking at a few different parameters, but one of the three things that they're working on is decarbonizing the peak. They saw what we were doing and said, yeah, we should be looking at that as a state agency. And Pittsfield Generating is one of the ones that they're studying. So there's been a lot more interest lately in seeing what can happen with this plant. And we got to take a tour of the inside. And
was that the first time you'd been inside?
Yeah. And generally, they don't let the public in. You know, it's a bit of a security risk to have people go through there. But it's not like an imminent danger of falling apart, but it is definitely old. There were still some old control things that I remember, those computer screens from, you know, the early 80s. and you know, the water towers, not necessarily great. And there's a lot of, you know, things there that they're not putting everything they could into modernizing the plant and making it as efficient as it could be. So we've been talking with them for a couple of years now, but now there's renewed interest in seeing if they can transition. And there was recently a meeting with the mayor, the owners of the plant, and several business leaders in town that are interested. And one of the things that some of them brought up is that some businesses that were looking to come to Pittsfield didn't because of the lack of clean power. They didn't like being near a big fossil fuel plant with that as like the main extra source of power in town. So there could be an economic benefit as well in attracting clean industry, high tech industry if we didn't still have a big fossil fuel peaker in the middle of town.
So then the answer to that is what kind of backup? Because obviously the grid and electricity, we need, there are periods of time where if we didn't have that source of electricity, a lot of people would be without power, right?
Yep.
Or potentially without power. It could be rolling blackouts and things like that, things that we don't want to happen. We expect when we go to the light switch, when we throw it, there's going to be power, whether it's a hot day out or a cold day out. I think everybody has gotten to the point where that's an expectation. So what is it that can replace things like peaker plants?
There are a lot of exotic ideas, like compressed air.
Compressed air, how would that work?
They compress the air while the power is available.
Okay.
And then when it's not available, they release it, and that generates electricity.
I think of a place like Bear Swamp, for example, which is sort of a battery in a way, right? You're pumping water while you have cheap electricity up to the top of the mountain.
Yep.
And then when you need it at a peak time, you release it, right? And then that generates electricity. That was an idea from the 60s, 50s maybe even.
Which has its own environmental impact.
Of course,
so you don't
want
to start flooding, you know, basins just to have a battery.
It's good for the kayakers, though.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And another similar one is raising big blocks and then dropping them to generate electricity. But those aren't, you know, commercially available.
Right.
So
couldn't really make that out to scale, right?
You can. It's just not viable yet.
Mm.
They're still working on developing, you know, making it more affordable and so on.
Mm.
But it can be done. But what's most available right now is lithium batteries or battery storage.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about those is they have a period that matches a duration that matches what the average peak is. So even with off-the-shelf lithium batteries, you can get most of the peak out of a simple set of lithium batteries. There are other batteries that are commercially available that have a longer period. There's a type called Iron Flow, and that can last up to 12 hours. And I just took a look at all of the times that the plant was called on in the last year. The longest period is 24 hours. So if you have a double set of lithium ion, you're going to meet that longest, you know, worst case scenario, longest duration. And it can still serve those short durations in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. So could a battery plant, so to speak, be built in places where there were peaker plants and in on those same footprints at that scale? Would that be a one-for-one, swap in? Would that work?
Not exactly one-for-one, but yes, you could do that. The trick is you don't really need one-for-one.
Mm.
You don't need to be able to generate 100 megawatts. What you need is to meet that peak so that a lower number can still meet that peak. And actually, we've got other batteries coming from Form Energy, which is a Massachusetts company, although the batteries are being built in West Virginia, that can go 100 hours.
Wow.
So we've got a variety of things coming, easy to cover the peaks, and we are currently wasting 60% of our average amount of electricity. So on the grid, we only, on average, use 40% of the capacity of the maximum amount out there. We're stupid to be wasting it. We ought to be storing it for future use while it's clean energy and make use of the existing grid.
So is there an incentive, I guess, because obviously these are all businesses, right? These are, what did you call it, investor-owned utilities?
Exactly, IOUs.
Yeah, interesting. But obviously that means that there needs to be sort of a capitalistic incentive of some kind for someone to invest in changing these over, right, to battery storage, and do they want to put the investment in? Will they get a long-term return on their investment? You know, and of course, will it work? That has to be that has to be settled science first, right? That all has to work before anyone wants to put a dollar into an investment to change these things over. Do the plant owners have that investment opportunity and incentive to do that?
Cogentrix, which is the one that owned Doreen Street Woodland, and they're now converting over a big plant in West Springfield, and both they and Hull Street, the owners of Pittsfield Generating, have said that it's not the capital investment that's the problem. They can come up with capital to convert. Mm-hmm. It's that long-term business model that is the trickier part. The folks for West Springfield Cogentrix had no problem coming up with that. They're being tripped up a little bit with the new tariffs and so on. They're keeping a close eye on it, but it looks like it's still going forward, even with that headwind. So it can be done. Hull Street said that they've had trouble finding a way to make that work, but the state still has a lot of incentives. They have the Clean Peak Standard, which pays people to charge up batteries when there's a lot of renewables on the grid. So that is a huge difference between that and other states. Again, the folks from Cogentrix are working on doing this in other states, and they said it's so much better in Massachusetts because of state incentives. So that model is there.
Is Massachusetts one of the states in the forefront of making these efforts?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and especially for peak supply. That Clean Peak standard makes a big difference.
So that, I guess, would imply also that there are states that are resisting this effort?
Or haven't gone down that path, for sure.
And it's new enough that we just aren't seeing, you know, long-term results because it's new.
Yeah. Yep.
So as you get long-term results, it's easier to get the financing that shows that, yes, really, you are going to be getting your return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the you
mentioned, it's chicken or egg, really, right? It's you have to put it out there to prove that it can work, but you can't do that until someone invests in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned, you know, can it be done on site? One of the problems with Pittsfield Generating is it's only 6 acres, that lot that they're on.
Mm-hmm.
So if they take the plant out, they get 6 acres of storage. They need more acres.
Mm.
But they're already on GE property, and they're surrounded by a bunch of GE brownfield.
Mm.
So it is possible, hopefully, for them to work with GE and get more space to build.
Well, you wonder about some of the, like the Building 12 and Building 14 that were just taken down recently. I don't know what their plans are for what they, that's still GE property, right? They own that. That was not part of the consent decree of turning it over to PETA and imagining the space the way that the other parts of the plant were. But I wonder if that might be, an opportunity for something like that. Again, an industrial area where it's already permitted, you would expect that you could do things like that without, too many headwinds, I guess.
And it's a perfect use for it, too, because that land shouldn't be disturbed because of what's buried underneath.
Yeah.
So that and solar are great things to put in. So if they did the batteries and the solar to charge it, they would guarantee that they're charging it on as green energy as possible. So even less emissions than charging from the grid straight up.
How important is it to have plants like this near the interconnection to the grid? Does that just make it easier?
Yeah, much easier. Mm-hmm. There's a whole load of permitting that doesn't have to happen. There's a whole bunch of infrastructure that you don't need to build. It's already there. Mm-hmm. And of course, there is the substation right at the plant. So it's one of those perfect locations for it, between that and the brownfields around it.
Yeah, and then we've got Doreen and Woodland, where the existing peakers were removed. Every substation ought to have battery storage. It would provide a way to have continuous power if the rest of the grid goes down. It's just crazy we're not doing this.
Yeah.
But you run into the different investor-owned utilities, IOUs, at the moment can't own those. So it would have to be leasing it to somebody else to actually have it. And then you've got our ISO New England, or Independent System Operator for New England, that is the one that's sort of the air traffic controller of the grid, who's making things difficult as well.
Now, why would they make it difficult?
It's really
Well, they've always...
You would think that they'd want to, you know, facilitate in some way, right? That would be my expectation. If you're running a grid, if you're making sure that everyone has available sufficient power and, you know, consistent, why would you make this kind of transition difficult?
A really good question. We've been asking them. They are a independent nonprofit agents or entity. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're the good guys. They're the ones who are used to running a grid with a few big power plants, and that is how they know how to do it. We have so much capacity on our grid. If we could take, well, if we would take advantage of every electric vehicle out there, of all the extra capacity in our homes when we're not cooling or heating. We have so much capacity, and there's the technology for ISO New England to actually take advantage of it. They just have to make it happen, and we're pushing for that.
And things are improving a little bit. They're starting to finally get smart meters in, and that allows you to set up a system where when the grid starts to head towards peak, they can, as long as you agree to, it's totally voluntary, but if you want to be part of the solution, you can say, yes, you can turn down my thermostat a couple of degrees or turn it up a couple of degrees in the summer so I'm not using as much energy for air conditioning. Or, yes, you can delay my car charging until the wee hours of the night when the peak is gone. And if you have really fancy appliances, they can, you know, delay the time that it runs. I don't have a super fancy washer, but I do have a delay. So I make sure that my washer goes off in the middle of the night because I know it's not during peak. So
do you think that people would worry, though, about sort of ceding control of what they do in their house to an entity somewhere else that, you know, I'd rather prefer that I do, you know, make those choices?
Yep. And even if you participate in that program, you can say, no, I need those extra couple degrees. You know, you can go ahead and override it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, a phone app. So you can say, okay, today I need to have my car fully charged by this time, and it will be. But how it gets charged by that time, you can let them control. And if we all did that, the amount of extra electricity we have on our grid, we would not be hitting these peaks because we've got it there. We could use our existing grid. We just aren't set up to do it yet.
Yeah. We're speaking today with folks from Berkshire Environmental Action Team, BEAT. We have Jane Wynn, the executive director. We have Rose Wessel, the program director of No Fracked Gas in Mass. And right now talking about generating electricity and what that takes to do and how those things will maybe change and morph over time as technology gets better, the battery technology gets better. And of course, you know, the idea of putting these types of things online versus the peaker plants, there's always, I assume, some impact when you're manufacturing batteries. That has an environmental impact, right? And so is there an effort to move away from lithium to other things that are more environmentally friendly?
Yeah, we really would like to see more iron flow batteries and iron air batteries. The chemistry on those doesn't allow for thermal runaway. You know, there's a lot.
Explosion, essentially.
Yeah.
Is that a nice word for
it? No, thermal runaway is what happens before the explosion.
Okay.
So it starts overheating and then it becomes this chain of eventually ending in an explosion. One thing to know about lithium batteries is they are getting much, much safer. The systems have fire suppression, for one thing, but they've also started adding phosphorus. So if you get the lithium phosphorus batteries, Phosphate. If you get lithium phosphate batteries, thermal runaway is a lot less likely. So there have been a couple of big explosions lately that, you know, grab people's attention. Most of those were much older installations that didn't have the phosphate, didn't have fire suppression in there. One of them, the big one in California, was stacked batteries, which they found out is really dangerous to do.
Not a good idea.
So if you, they don't stack them anymore. There's now insurance guidelines on how far apart the different units need to be so that if one does go, it doesn't take the others with it. Mm. So there, it's getting better, but we would still like to see, you know, because of the mining and, mm-hmm. and right. you know, cobalt and lithium that go into the other batteries, we would love to see iron air and iron flow become
well, not
normal.
Just the mining, but many of the iron-based batteries are completely non-toxic,
mm-hmm. yep.
so that at the end of life, there isn't any issue. And we really have gotten much better at recycling lithium. So that mm-hmm. is becoming a new source of lithium, mm-hmm. which is really exciting. Yep. About time we had a circular system.
Right. And just the idea of recycling batteries in general is, you know, again, kind of a new concept in some ways, the idea that when you mm-hmm. go and get a new battery for your car, everyone expects that you'll bring the old battery back and it will be recycled, right? I'm sure there was a time at which that wasn't an expectation, right? It was just, just throw the old battery away.
Yeah.
You get a new battery, no problem. It's just, but we don't expect that anymore. We expect to recycle things.
Yep. And if people are looking to recycle, you know, your little AA, D batteries, you can bring them to BEAT. Mm. And we actually send them to be recycled, including the alkaline ones as well as the rechargeable. Well,
so better than going in the landfill, which
exactly.
is where everything is going, right?
Yep.
When you throw it in your garbage, you got to know that's where it's headed.
Yep.
Into a landfill somewhere. Maybe not in your backyard, but into a landfill.
Which, in my opinion, we had the problem of having a toxic burning facility in Pittsfield, I think.
For 40-something years. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that going into our air. And I think what people don't remember about that is all the ash from that plant still went into a landfill right at the confluence of the Westfield and Connecticut River.
Oh, wow.
So that you still had a landfill of highly toxic material.
Concentrated. Right?
Concentrated yeah. in a place that's
It went
at
to
risk.
Bondi's Island?
It did.
Oh, my God. I didn't even know that. And Bondi's Island every once in a while does catch fire because it's also a landfill. Not often, but it's happened twice in the 30 years that I've lived in Mass. So.
And with climate change, its location is under threat.
Yeah, that's another.
I think everybody ought to be more concerned about the legacy we live and, you know, the lives that we live and what we do. Every one of those things contributes to whatever it is you're leaving behind. I'm sure you think about that all the time.
Yep.
What about other future technologies? And I think about, you know, battery storage in people's homes, which it seems like it's slow to take off, probably because it's an expensive thing to add to your home, right? I mean, it's a lot bigger than buying a new washing machine. It's a cost-intensive thing.
How about if you just have an electric vehicle and then now there is actually, I think they're inverters that will allow you to power your home from your vehicle, which is actually a better battery or bigger battery than people are apt to be installing in their home. So
that's a great solution. And I got to tell you, you know, the expense is what stopped me from getting a house battery so far because we generate more solar than we use. I'd love to be able to store that.
Yeah. But what about geothermal? How about putting that in people's homes, building new systems?
Excellent. I have an issue with the word geothermal because it gets used for anything in the ground.
Okay.
To me, geothermal is where you're actually taking the heat from the mantle. So places that like Iceland, where you've got volcanic heat.
Okay.
I would rather use the term
ground source. Heat
ground
pumps.
Source. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So installing ground source heat pumps is awesome, or district heating in places like Pittsfield, where the gas lines currently run, we could be running ground source heat pipes that go to a number of buildings. That way you're sort of distributing it amongst the buildings. People use different amounts of heat at different times, and you can have a really efficient system to heat and cool buildings that way.
Yeah, it's not just heating, right? You can also use the power that's used for cooling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Once you go a few feet down, the average temperature is around 50 degrees. Mm. So it you don't have to go very far down, where geothermal means going down, like Jane said, to the mantle of the earth to extract heat. But it would be a great way to get fossil fuels out of home heating.
How far away do you think more accepted use of that technology is? Because we're still talking about the grid, right? We're still talking about how we heat and power our homes.
Exactly. It's already starting. There's certainly lots of people, especially when you're building new, putting in geothermal or ground source makes perfect sense. Yeah. And then the district heating, oh dear, Rose, in Framingham?
Framingham.
They've done, I think it was Eversource did an initial trial of how this works. Mm. And I think with that starting, that's going to start taking off as well, especially as we have old leaking gas pipelines. Yeah. It only makes sense to replace them with something that'll be viable into the future.
So circling back, Rose, about the Pittsfield Generating Plant, as it being 35 to 40 years old and in design, how much longer do you think a plant like that has before it's either taken down, which isn't necessarily a great solution either for various reasons. I mean, certainly power reasons, tax reasons, things like that, right? Those are all considerations. But how much longer can a plant like that be viable before something needs to change?
There are a whole bunch of factors coming up against it. You mentioned tax. Mm. They recently brought to the appeals board their tax payments to the city. It was cut in half so far. So instead of, almost $700,000 to the city, it's more like $350,000 now. Hmm. And they tried to appeal again.
Due to the age of the plant, I assume?
Yeah, depreciation. Mm-hmm. So that means that they're not planning to bolster it if it's a depreciation issue. So I don't know how many years that plant would have in the state that it's in without major upgrades and renovations. Few years. So, and do you let it run into the ground and then we lose the tax base anyway? Or do you put in something that has a life of decades? You know, once you transition it, you've got that for a couple of decades again.
Right.
And it stops the depreciation of the tax value. So it's worth it on that front.
Well, it sounds like that won't be the last time we'll be talking about the issue of peaker plants, and we'll definitely bring that up again. We're coming up on our top of the hour break.
Okay.
So let's hold that thought just for now, and we will return with more on this and many other issues of environmental concern and lots of things actually going on in Pittsfield right now that we want to talk about. So we want to pack all that into the second half hour. Let's go to our break now. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM. Pittsfield Community Radio will be back right after this. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com. Eats a Pizza is back. Join PCTV and WTBR for the biggest and tastiest pizza event around, May 15th. At Berkshire Hills Country Club on Benedict Road in Pittsfield. Enjoy pizza from Shire Tavern, The Locker Room, and much more. And you get to decide who will win the People's Choice Award. Eats a Pizza at Berkshire Hills Country Club on May 15th. Tickets are $20 for adults and $10 for children 12 and under in advance. Get your tickets now at pittsfieldtv.org/pizza. Support for Eats a Pizza comes from Cohen, Kinney, Valicenti, and Cook.
PCTV Select is now available on so many platforms. You can get it with any device you have available, all free to download and use. If you're watching at home, use your Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, or Apple TV device, or even your computer, and see programming in full HD quality. Watching on the go? Download PCTV Select from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store for your smartphone. It's that easy and free. PCTV Select is everywhere you need to be.
Berkshire Running Foundation was created to advance and support the positive impact the running community has in the neighborhoods we live. In the past decade, we have been able to donate over $300,000 to dozens of nonprofit organizations here in Berkshire County through our races and free wellness programming. Please visit berkshirerun.org to support our mission to continue to have a social and economic impact on the Berkshires.
Hey, this is Dave Cachet, the archivist of the WTBR-FM Vinyl Library. Tune in Saturday mornings at 9 for Random Draw, a trip through the vinyl archives of WTBR. I'll take you back in time to when these records were brand new. Each week, I'm going to pick a random spot in the vast record library of WTBR and pull out a bunch of great vinyl to play for you. That's right, an hour's worth of random songs with that rich vinyl sound just the way you remember them. That's Random Draw every Saturday morning at 9, only on WTBR.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR in Lee. We are live and local this morning, Friday, May 9th, and thanks for joining us as always. Do want to mention the PCTV and WTBR fundraiser, Eats a Pizza, which is happening next Thursday. It's only 6 days away now at Berkshire Hills Country Club. You can get your tickets now online at pittsfieldtv.org/pizza, I believe is the correct URL there. And, of course, you can always pick them up here at PCTV as well. They're more expensive at the door, so get them in advance. It's a fun event. You get to eat a lot of pizza. There's door prizes. There's all kinds of different stuff. So stick around. But 7 different organizations that are helping us out. And it was sponsored by Cohen, Kinney, Velicenti, and Cook. We appreciate their sponsorship of the event as well. So hope to see you there at Eats a Pizza. And let's go to the weather forecast and see. We do have kind of a little bit of a soaker out there today. I'm looking out the window. It's still raining. An hour from now, it's going to be still raining. 12 hours from now, it's going to be still raining. It's just one of those days. But here's what the National Weather Service has to say about that.
Berkshire weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Flood watch in effect through Saturday morning. Today, rain. A slight chance of thunderstorms this afternoon. Some thunderstorms may produce heavy rainfall this afternoon. Cooler. Near steady temperature in the lower 50s. East wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of rain near 100%. Tonight, rain. Lows in the mid 40s. East wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming northeast 5 to 10 miles per hour after midnight. Chance of rain 90%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Well, there you go. So watch out for the floods or maybe flash flooding. Check your basements. All the normal stuff for when you get some rain. This is supposed to happen in April. We're supposed to get some nice weather here in May. What's going on here? All right, welcome back to the show. We have Jane Wynn and Rose Wessel from BEAT. And we were just talking about peaker plants and electricity generation. We wanted to tie that up with a bow before we move on to other topics. And Rose, you wanted to say something right before we went to break?
We've been talking about Pittsfield generating and all of the possibilities that are swirling around it, transitioning from a fossil fuel plant to battery storage. And with all of these different conversations going on at the state level and at the city level, we wanted to make sure that it's time to check back in with the folks who live near the plant and the neighborhoods around the plant. So we have an event coming up called Future Power, Community Discussion on the Evolution of Pittsfield Generating. And that's on May 20th. At 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Ellendale Elementary School. So we're going to be out flyering door to door as well, and we hope to see lots of folks from the neighborhood near the plant come and give us their feedback, give us ideas, fears, hopes, all the stuff that they want to voice.
Yeah, it's important to remember that the plant like this is smack dab in the middle of a residential neighborhood and a school.
Yep.
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 So. keep that in mind. And then also we started talking about battery storage. And, of course, right now in the news and in the Conservation Commission, they are debating the merits of a battery storage facility that would be installed over on Williams Street, over near the plaza there. And it's meeting some resistance, certainly from neighbors. And it sounds like that's a good idea in a bad location. But that's exactly. You tell me, is that what your opinion is of the plant?
Absolutely. Mm. It just makes no sense to put it there when it should be somewhere like at the end of Doreen Street, in where there's already an existing substation, perfect tie-in for it. It's in an industrial area where the old peaker was removed. Yeah. There's plenty of room for it. It's
basically
just
in the same area, right down the street.
Right down the street and away from people. Mm. It's much better location, but it's also owned by EverSource, the actual location. So they'd have to be leasing the space.
Okay. And so right now there's, I assume, an incentive to put it where they're trying to put it because someone owns that land and they're trying to make a profit on that. I don't know the details, but I'm guessing.
I would assume so, but it's just absolutely the wrong location. Mm. And it means you're going to have to put in really more wiring to get it to a substation. Okay. It just does not make sense in that location.
Why is it a bad location right there?
First of all, there's no need to have it so close to people, but also you want it where there is an interconnection to the grid, so it's most useful for the grid.
Yep.
And it just...
Is it because of a floodplain, or is it because just residential nearby? Because are we talking that there could be a danger of it being there? I mean, all these things have been brought up.
I'm less worried about the danger of it being there, but there's just no reason. And it, from a grid standpoint, isn't logical. Mm. So that, yes, you've got all sorts of different reasons. You would think with enough compounding reasons, they would consider a different location.
And since ratepayers pay for all these projects, I mean, if you can save the huge amount of money it takes to put in a new substation, why not use the existing one?
Right.
Yeah. And we've got that and where Pittsfield Generating is, and then another one down in Lee. Let's make use of those.
Yeah. I guess we'll leave that an open question. Yeah. Why don't we do that? But there we go. So then that sounds to me like that is another issue that will wind its way through. And we'll find out the ultimate authority on that. Is that the city council or is that the Conservation Commission with zoning? Where does that all fit in?
I think any one of them can be a roadblock if they feel it's just not an appropriate location.
All right. Well, I'm sure the people in that neighborhood are going to be advocating for themselves. They already have. And we'll see how that all works out. Other issues coming up. Do we want to talk about the Breathe Easy Berkshires program?
Yeah. Breathe Easy Berkshires is the air quality monitoring program for Pittsfield. We have 9 stationary monitors across the city, and we have teams of folks that go out with mobile monitors to check the air quality at different locations. And they recently had a really good community discussion about the Butternut Fire, you know, that wildfire that took hold of South County and then all the smoke blew up the valley.
Yep.
They had a really great discussion and got a lot of feedback from community members, not only about the experience of what it's like to deal with that pollution, but also communications about a natural disaster happening at the same time. So they're looking to speak with other communities, their emergency planning departments and so on, and give them the feedback of what they learned from that that talk. They've also been working with students at Taconic High School, learning how to use the monitors and go around the school and sample the air inside the school as well. And of course, we're pulling in ongoing monitoring for a while, at least another year and a half. Hopefully, if things don't get canceled, that's another factor. But
well, it's interesting you mentioned inside air quality, because when I think of air quality, I think of the first thing you said, which was there was a big fire. We had fires in New York City and from Canada also that not New York City, in New Jersey, that basically ended up coming up here. Right. We got a good whiff of that when we went outside. We saw the haze right in the clouds. The air quality those days must have been absolutely terrible. I'm assuming your air quality reading stations donations probably went off the charts during that time?
It definitely registered.
Yeah.
And that's something that folks can check at any time. Mm. If you go to breatheeasyberkshires.org, you can see what the stationary monitors are pulling in right in your neighborhood, because we have them distributed throughout the city.
But then there's indoor air quality, right?
Yeah.
Which is another whole thing.
And we're not looking at that under a microscope, but the same air quality monitors work indoors. So it was great for teaching the students how to use that kind of technology.
And I believe Berkshire Regional Planning Commission is going to be looking at it indoors again, if the federal government doesn't terminate already existing signed contracts.
Mm. Yep.
Well,
yep.
And I think that's what a lot of folks in Berkshire County, for various reasons, are concerned about, right? Arts organizations, anyone who's dependent on, you know, the science that the federal government has funded for, you know, many years, decades, to the benefit of a lot of people. So, you know, I guess when you're taking the meat axe to something like that, what kinds of things are we losing and how hard will it be to build them back up?
Yep. That's one of the things that affected the other part of the Breathe Easy program. We're looking at the health effects of air quality monitoring because, as folks may know, there's a huge life expectancy discrepancy in Pittsfield. Hmm. If you live downtown, you're lifespan is going to be about 12 and a half years less than if you live in the southeastern part of the city.
Really?
It's startling. Mm. I mean, when we talk with other folks who look at this regularly, their heads always jerk back. I mean, it is very, and there are a lot of things that go into that, but air quality and environmental factors is part of the picture, and that's at least something that we can do something about. That's what prompted us to want to do the air quality monitoring in the first place.
And have you found that the air quality monitoring shows that air quality in a downtown area is much worse than other areas of the city, and for what reasons?
It's not much, much worse.
No.
But if we get bad readings, that's where it tends to be. A lot of it seems to be traffic related as well. We have noticed a bump when Pittsfield Generating runs, going back to peakers. So point sources like that do contribute to it.
Also, well, the wildfire and somebody had said, "Yeah, oh, but it's a wildfire, so that smoke is okay." No, it's definitely not.
Yeah. You still don't want it in your lungs.
It may be natural, but it's still particulate matter going into your bloodstream. Yeah. So one of the things that we encountered was one of the team members is working on a health study, and he's looking at health data, and we saw it like disappearing from the website. So we made sure to grab everything we could, and we found actually an archived backup of the EPA data, CDC, and NIH, so Centers for Disease Control and National Institutes of Health have all that health data that we're looking at to get an idea historically of where different health conditions that air pollution causes show up. And they are starting to notice, parsing this data, getting the data sets to match up, that there are specific health clusters in those downtown areas, you know, clusters of health effects that are happening there. So right now they're putting it all together into a map so that we can toggle on the different health effects and see where they're concentrated through the city. And for the rest, they're looking at a lot of community engagement coming up this summer at local events.
Right. We want to know where people in the city think there may be problems. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things I was really surprised at, one of the worst times to be outdoors breathing air is the 4th of July.
Really?
Our fireworks cause really horrible air quality.
I would not think that would be really more than a blip on the radar.
It definitely, it's a blip in that it's on that evening, but it goes extreme well. Way out of the good zone.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I would not have thought of that.
Yeah. And we also set up an air quality monitor closer to the Bel Air Dam.
Yeah. So the state will be doing some monitoring of air quality, but they said, well, yeah, we'll let you know basically if there's a problem a day after or possibly a week after, and we don't feel that's good enough. So we have one of our stationary monitors that you can see on the breatheeasyberkshires.org website that is just uphill of the Bel Air Dam, so you can see it almost real time.
Almost real time.
15-minute delay at most. Yeah.
Well, as we saw also when GE was taking down their buildings 12 and 14, right?
Yeah.
There were levels in exceeding a certain limit, but we really didn't know about that for, what, 10, 14 days, something like that later?
Yeah.
You know, so this would be much better because now you can take a look. Now, what actions can you take knowing that there's been, you know, a change in those levels?
I think one thing is you can call the city and say, hey, they're not doing proper dust suppression.
Okay.
So that's an immediate thing, but also wear an N95 mask if you're going to be outdoors or stay indoors
during that time. Yeah. Yep. Hopefully that doesn't end up being the issue. But when you see them spraying the water when they're taking things down, right, that's the dust suppression.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And I'm concerned about that at Bel Air Dam because there are toxic materials in the sediment. Unfortunately, they're only planning on removing half the sediment and leaving the rest in place, which the city will have to maintain in perpetuity.
Is it being dug up and then buried, or is it just being left and capped?
So they're going to dig up half of it and take it to an out-of-state landfill.
The worst stuff, essentially.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And then the rest will be capped. But it means when you cap it along the riverbank, you can never let trees grow there, which means the city is going to have to be, us taxpayers are going to have to be paying to keep that up.
And why can't you plant trees in that space?
Because trees tend to grow with roots down into the contamination and then fall over, and this is a problem. It would make much more sense to just remove it, but it costs money.
Okay. So much bigger cost. And, of course, it's already a very expensive project, right, this being done by state funds and by ARPA funds. And on balance, getting rid of the Bel Air Dam, good thing, right?
Yes, awesome. Yeah. First of all, for safety reasons, but also anytime you're removing one of these old dams, you're allowing fish and wildlife passage. Also, rivers need the nutrients that come from upstream. So we think of having leaves and stuff falling in the river maybe as adding nutrients too much, but a lot of places below dams are starved of those nutrients, so you want all that moving. And dams also pond the water, and it heats up so that the water tends to be hot. And for a while downstream of a dam, it's still too hot, which is bad for species like our native brook trout. So
even a small change, right, in the temperature of the water changes the way that they can live in the river. That's where it's changing the health of the river, if you will.
And with climate change, our rivers are tending to be warmer, and we could lose appropriate habitat for brook trout. It's a big deal.
Which, if you don't care about brook trout, that's one thing. But what eats the brook trout, right? So now you're affecting them, and that's the whole cycle.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. The whole web.
But good to see. And anyone who has gone by that part of Wakona Street and take a look over to your right as you're going north, you'll see that the preparations are starting. I don't know exactly when the traffic gets changed, but that's going to be another one of those traffic disruptions that we'll be dealing with for a couple of years. But on balance, again, seeing an old industrial dam that really has no purpose anymore, taken out and restoring the river, it's got to be on balance a good thing. Yeah. Let's move on to garlic mustard, because I want to know what garlic mustard is and why I should pull it.
Well, garlic mustard is an invasive plant that non-native to our area and spreads rapidly, produces tons of seed, so it's hard to get rid of. But you want to talk about what you do with garlic mustard?
Garlic mustard happens to be tasty. So we recently got invaded at my house, so I have a lot of it growing around, and I pull it up by the roots to make sure that it won't come back.
Okay.
And then I cut the greens off. It's great chopped up in salads. You can steam it like spinach. And I've even made pesto out of it.
It's basically a flowering plant, right? That's what it is, a green but flowering plant.
Green flowering plant whose flowers are sort of white or whitish green. And it's very tasty.
You can see a picture of it, by the way, on the Berkshire Environmental Action Team's website, which I investigated just before you got here. So I did see that, yes.
But tomorrow we're going to be pulling up toothwort. garlic mustard in a really important place. We have an awesome volunteer who studied these small white butterflies, the veined white and the West Virginia white, which are either rare or declining in our area. And they use toothwort to lay their eggs on, and their larvae eat toothwort.
Okay.
Garlic mustard is growing in the same area as this toothwort, and they will lay their eggs on garlic mustard, but the eggs won't develop.
Oh.
So it is causing real problems for these butterflies. So tomorrow we're going to be going out with a group of awesome volunteers, pulling garlic mustard along Lenox, New Lenox Road in Lenox. And we're trying to get rid of as much garlic mustard as possible in this area where there is toothwort, where there are these two butterflies. And Jessica Duffy is studying to see what effects this is having on these butterflies.
Is it easy to tell the difference between garlic mustard and toothwort?
Absolutely.
Like if I'm out there pulling something, do I know what I'm pulling?
Yes. Okay. And garlic mustard is pretty easy to identify once you've been to one of these pulls.
Okay.
And toothwort looks very, very different, but they're both in the mustard family, which is why the butterflies will lay eggs on both of them, but they only survive on one of them.
And sometimes people do wonder why it is that they should care about invasive species in general, right? Why it is that we should make sure that, A, we don't bring new ones in that can compete with the things that are supposed to be here in this area that take over, but then also why it's important to get rid of the ones that are here.
Yep. And I think a lot of it is our native species have grown up together. So a lot of our insects on up through the food web only get their nutrition from the native species. And, for example, Oriental bittersweet provides a whole lot less nutrition for our birds than the native bittersweet or other native plants. So often these non-native invasives really are disrupting the whole food web. It's not just that we don't like seeing them take over an area.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's more than a nuisance, basically, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
I've heard people talk about invasive bamboo. That's the one I hear about a lot. And people just hate it because it takes over everything in their yard or their garden or whatever, right?
So exactly, and it's very, very difficult to get rid of, also called Japanese knotweed.
Okay.
That's another edible, by the way. it's got a nice lemony flavor, but you have to pick it before the leaves really unfurl. So that ship has sailed this year. But while you're pulling it in the spring, the little shoots are very tasty.
So again, that's tomorrow, 9 to 12. Is that right? And how do people get involved with this if they want to, if they're hearing about it now?
If they go to our website, thebeatnews.org, you can sign up there. Or if you email team@thebeatnews.org, we will make sure you get signed up and get directions to where we're meeting. And I don't remember the exact times. So if it said that on the website, then it's right.
I've got a website here. I could probably just look. But anyway. So and I guess this is the action in the Berkshire Environmental Action Team, right? These are things that you do. You go out and you take care of things.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do river cleanups and keep your eyes open. We'll be having at least two of those, possibly three this summer.
Great. And I know we're getting short on time here. We've only got a couple minutes left. I know we had wanted to talk about pipelines in the area. We want to get a quick hit in on that. Rose?
Yeah, the thing about the pipelines is they're in the much larger area. There's nothing going on directly in Berkshire County. We're keeping an eye on Enbridge. They have proposed a big pipeline, but then they ended up building small pieces that weren't under that pipeline name. So the latest piece that they're working on is out on Cape Cod, where they're replacing the bridges. But instead of just restructuring the infrastructure to go with the bridge construction, they're putting in much larger infrastructure. So they've been slowly putting in piece by piece a much larger capacity. And one of the ones that's a little closer by is Constitution Pipeline. The current administration has talked about they want to bring that pipeline back. It's one that failed.
And these are natural gas pipelines?
Yeah, these are big gas transmission lines, kind of like the Northeast Energy Direct, if people remember the NED pipeline from way back in the day. It's that scale. It's a large keystone kind of scale. The Constitution would bring gas from the fracking fields in Pennsylvania up through New York to connect to a hub just west of Albany. And connecting to that hub makes gas, makes a lot of gas available to spur other projects that might come through this area, other big gas transmission lines. So they're trying to get support for it. So far, there isn't a lot. And even the pipeline company has said, we're not going to build it unless we can get all the governors of New England and New York and so on board. And so far, they're not getting a lot of headway.
Well, it doesn't make any sense. We have these legislated plans to decarbonize, which means we need less gas. And why should ratepayers be paying for building new infrastructure, which they get a guaranteed profit to build, when we're not going to be using it?
And again, there isn't local demand enough to justify the need for the pipeline. Even 14 years ago, when NED was proposed, most of it was destined to go to export, which raises the cost of gas.
It is export,
which is why we're as in the shape we are.
We live in interesting times.
Yeah.
And we'll have more to say on that the next time that the folks from BEAT join us here on Morning Drive. Jane Wynn, Rose Wessel, thanks again for being here. I always appreciate the discussion.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a good day, everybody. Have a great weekend. Stay out of the puddles. Take care.
Just